The National Broadcasting Company presents Eyes Aloft.
Army flash. One, single, very low, scene, 8, Catherine, 2, overhead, southeast.
Eyes aloft, watching the sky, watching for planes flying the lanes up above. Eyes aloft.
Eyes aloft. The 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces, in cooperation with West Coast radio stations, presents this series of programs honoring the 150,000 volunteer civilian observers and filter center workers whose round-the-clock vigilance keeps watchful guard of the Pacific Coast against attack by enemy planes.
Eyes aloft, night and day, will help protect the USA.
This is Ken Carpenter speaking. Tonight, the 14th edition of Eyes Aloft, featuring a new and true great American story. You'll hear the Gordon Jenkins Orchestra and the Sportsman, the weekly presentation of the Gold Trophy Award, excerpts from the famous McKinley Diary, our bouquet department, why will they do it? And during the program, Captain Russell Z. Smith will give further important information regarding supplemental gasoline rationing to volunteers doing essential driving in the interests of the Aircraft Warning Service. Here now, your Eyes Aloft narrator, Jane Whitman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is shameful to have to admit that within our own rank of civilian volunteers of the Aircraft Warning Service, there are saboteurs. Sprinkled here and there, we occasionally uncover small-time fifth columnists. But we believe a few of those committing the crimes realize what they are doing. And so we hold up this mirror for these offenders to see themselves as others in their home communities see them. That is why we have established this department called Why Will They Do It? A short time ago, a certain gentleman in Oregon made a trip into southern Washington. On his trip, the man saw some things he had never seen before. When he returned home, he complained to his chief observer.
Boy, have I been a sucker for the last 5 months.
What do you mean, Jack?
Oh, we're all suckers. Every one of us have put in our time at that observation post.
Now, wait a minute.
I just come back from a trip, Bill, and I've seen plenty.
And what'd you see? What makes you think we've been given the runaround?
Well, I tell you. And from now on, you can mark me off your observer's list. I'm done going up there and putting in my good time watching for planes.
Now, hold on, Jack.
You know what I saw?
What?
Well, I drove into a town and dropped into the drugstore to say hello to an old friend of mine. I just happened to ask if the town had an observation post in it.
And did it?
Sure. My friend told me where it was. On top of a certain warehouse, just across the tracks on the way out of town. Well, driving out of town that afternoon, I spotted the warehouse my friend told me about.
Yeah?
There it was, right on top. A little tower they'd built. You know who the observers were in that shack?
No, who?
Soldiers.
Soldiers?
United States Army soldiers. Well, what do you think of that?
You saw soldiers up in the tower, Jack?
Well, I didn't see any soldiers in the tower. I was driving by a little fast. But I saw plenty of soldiers all around the ground, around the warehouse. Don't you get it, Bill?
Get what?
We're suckers in this town of ours. Other towns let the Army operate the observation post.
Now, hold on, Jack. You aren't sure.
Why should I spend my good time up in a shack at night looking for planes if some places have the Army doing the job? Wait till I tell some of the other observers here in town. Wait till I tell...
That was startling, disconcerting news to be tossed at the chief observer by one of his watchers. If it were true, that chief observer could see his entire local structure falling down around him. He telephoned his county director at once. The county director, equally surprised, checked with the Army at once. That same afternoon, the county director, fortified with the truth of the situation, arrived in town.
I drove right down to see you, Bill.
Oh, you got here fast. And thanks for the phone call, letting me know you were coming. I got Jack to come over.
Yeah, I gotta get back to my office.
Fred, you remember Jack. He's the fellow who told me about the soldiers running the observation post up in that Washington town.
Yeah. Well, you made a mistake, Jack.
Oh, yeah? Well, I know what I saw with my own eyes, don't I?
Look, I called the Army. Talked to our ground observer officer in this area. He didn't know anything about soldiers taking over any observation posts in this neck of the woods.
Well, I saw it myself.
The officer checked with headquarters and called me back within the hour. Told me the whole story.
And what is it, Fred?
Let me tell it right straight to Jack here. He's going to change his tone. I'm just a little bit annoyed about this.
Well, I wouldn't have come here if I'd have thought that
Now listen to me. Your kind of talk is unfair to the aircraft warning service. It's sabotage, man, pure and simple. You thought you saw something, and you made a beautiful story out of it and brought it home.
I know what I saw.
All you saw was soldiers on guard around that warehouse.
What?
A short time ago, the Army rented that warehouse for a temporary garage for a bunch of Army trucks. Wherever there's Army equipment, there are soldiers to guard it.
So what?
So the observation post was on top of the warehouse. And civilian volunteers are up there running it and always have run it.
Yeah, but I'm...
Well, what do you think now, Jack?
Well,
I'm glad I caught this thing before you spread it around, Jack.
Oh, I'm getting out of here. I gotta get back to my office.
He was always stirring up trouble with one kind of wild story and another. I'm glad he's out of our picture.
Why will they do it? Well, what kind of a vote do you want to give a bird like that? We agree with your decision. Have you ever stopped to realize what would happen if the 150,000 of you civilian volunteers didn't continue to assume the job of operating the aircraft warning service for the 4th Fighter Command of the Army Air Forces? Well, listen to this. In the current November 16th issue of Time magazine, in the radio section, the editors make this comment.
A collapse in the volunteer system would have meant that 150,000 soldiers would have had to be turned into airplane spotters.
That indeed is a compliment. A hearty pat on the back to you who so loyally carry on, day and night, the vital work of the Aircraft Warning Service. You, 150,000 of you on the Pacific Coast, you civilian volunteers have made it possible for thousands of soldiers to carry on with the intensely vital tasks of war. You have released these soldiers so that they may man guns, tanks, planes, and carry the fight for freedom to the very doors of the Axis dictators. You are doing a vital work on the home front. You must continue. Don't let saboteurs and gossip mongers dissuade you. You are needed. You, too, are fighting this war. Now, one of our most popular features, the McKinley Diary. Unedited excerpts from the famous little black and white notebook. Comments jotted down by the observers of the McKinley, Oregon Post. We follow a winding path, a forest path, soft and resilient, with a fresh crop of dry brown needles dropped from pine and fir trees. Follow the winding path up over the crest of the mountain ridge, and then look down. Down to the green little valley below. There, below, a farm, neatly squared by a fence. The barn and sheds, red. The farmhouse, a mellowed white of weathered time. There is the call of turkeys, the bawl of a calf, the chug-chug of a distant logging donkey engine. We follow the path on down the side of the hill, across a meadow, through a barbed wire fence, and over the gravel road. Up the road to the bend, through a gate, and there, beneath the empty branches of the age-old cherry tree, stands the little unpainted shack, the valley's observation post. Shall we step in? Yes, here on the table, open, the McKinley Diary. Let's turn a page or so. Oh, yes, here's an entry. October 18th, 5 a.m.
Here we are on watch again. We were sorry to find Mrs. O'Sullivan ill when we arrived last evening. I tried to spade some in the yard today, but find the ground is too hard. It is only wet a few inches deep. Curtis Turner stopped yesterday on his way to Portland to go into the U.S. Army. He brought it to keep for him until... He certainly thinks a lot of that dog. He bade it goodbye with tears in his eyes. It is time now to get started home. Georgia Bunch.
Time for one more. Let's turn up to the front of the diary. Here's one. Written last May 11th.
1 a.m. The sky has become cloudy. The stars obscure. I hereby enter this poem I have scrawled tonight. Do not fret because another has an easier task to do. In the strife to save our country, this is set aside for you. Never mind the weary hours spent while others quietly laughed. In other posts are other people watching there in your behalf. When the clouds of revolution broke to make the people moan, just to warn the sleeping farmers, Paul Revere rode forth alone. Always must the individual seek to serve his fellow men when an angry foeman threatens to enslave the land again. When once more the dove of peace shall quit the thundering guns of death, and we hear the songs of gladness pouring out in every breath, you will gain much satisfaction from belonging to the hosts of courageous men and women at our observation posts. T.S. Easton.
And so we close McKinley Diary until another time.
Songwriters from Tin Pan Alley, New York, to Vine Street, Hollywood, have been turning out war songs by the hundreds. Few of them have hit the mark like Over There in the days of 1918. 6 weeks ago, Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition took the nation's fancy. Within the last 10 days, another one is skyrocketing. It's Hoagie Carmichael's tune with the jingle jangle lyrics, A Cranky Old Yank in a Clanky Old Tank. It's Gordon Jenkins and the Sportsman.
I'm a cranky old yank in a cranky old tank, and I'm heading for a hullabaloo. I'll be riding my tank through a Tokyo bank, sure as I'm an army buckaroo. And when I set my khaki down in old Nagasaki, I'll be singing like a wacky jackaroo. And you can bet by cracky, every sukiyaki lackey will be looking mighty tacky when I do. I'm a cranky old yank in a cranky old tank, and I'm heading for a hullabaloo. I'll be riding my swank little hanky-panky tank through the streets of Yokohama with a Honolulu mama. Singing those beat old flat on his seat old Hirohito blues. I go rolling along in my clanky old tank.
Bing!
Bang!
Bing!
Bang!
Rolling along in my hanky-panky tank. Down the streets of Yokohama with the Honolulu mama, singing those beat old flat on his seat old Hirohito blues. The cranky yank and a clanky old tank will make Hirohito sing the blues.
Last week, we issued the first official statement to observers and filter center workers about supplemental gas rationing to civilian volunteers of the Aircraft Warning Service. This week we have further word. Here is Captain Russell Z. Smith to give you the latest data. Ken Carpenter, will you and Captain Smith take over?
Indeed we will, Gain. And it's good news, Captain Smith?
Yes, Ken. Very good news. Last week we made an announcement on the Eyes Aloft program that arrangements have just been made with the regional office of the Office of Price Administration. Volunteers of the Aircraft Warning Service, upon proper certification, will be granted supplemental gasoline rations. This is to take care of the essential driving done by such volunteers in the interest of the Aircraft Warning Service.
Mm-hmm. Well, Captain Smith, didn't we mention last week that details would be given later? I mean, can you give any of those details now?
Well, Ken, instructions covering the gasoline rationing program, as it applies to the volunteers of the AWS, are now in the mail. These instructions, approved by the regional office of the Office of Price Administration, have been sent out to all chief observers and to all information and filter centers. Volunteers of the Aircraft Warning Service will be eligible for gasoline for all essential driving in the interest of the AWS. And that's the story to date, Ken.
Well, that's good news, Captain. Great and encouraging news to the civilian volunteers who plan to carry on the work of the Aircraft Warning Service. We know they're all glad to hear it.
Well, that's my story, Mr. Bruce. What can you do for us?
I'm not sure, Fay, but we'll do what we can.
You'll try to have your installation boys get a phone up there on the roof by tonight?
Well, I don't know where we're going to get the material. We'll have it there for you. The least we can do is cooperate with the Army and the Sheriff's Office. Yeah, we'll get your phone in.
Back at Ed Benedict's service station by about 11:30, Fay Jones found Ed half-hearted.
You talked to anybody yet, Ed?
I've been up one street and down the other all morning.
Sign up any observers?
Yeah, I knocked off a few public-spirited boys. Carlton Minner.
Fellow who runs Minner's Furniture Company?
Yeah, Carl's going to serve as an observer. Matter of fact, I chiseled Carl into donating a gas stove for the post.
Good.
Sending one of his men up to connect it this afternoon. Fellow over at the J.C. Penney Company donated a table.
But is he going to serve as an observer?
Sure. And the Woolworth store manager is going to give us some things to make the post comfortable. Say, I saw Dr. Radabaugh.
Dentist over at the Kern General Hospital?
Yeah, he says he'll serve as an observer anytime we want.
How many got lined up, Ed? This is swell.
No. No, it isn't swell, Faye.
Now, what do you mean?
Actually, I didn't get so many. Only got 11 lined up.
11? That all?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we need 50 or more. You got to get them, Ed.
Where? I'm willing to keep canvassing, but some people don't catch on to how important this is.
Hey, wait a minute, Ed. I got an idea.
What?
Over at the Southern Pacific Shops, they're going to have a big meeting this noon during lunch hour.
Yeah?
I heard about it around town this morning. They got a new public address system installed over at the roundhouse so they can have meetings.
Yeah, what are you driving at?
They're going to dedicate their public address system this noon. There'll be a big crowd of Southern Pacific workers there, won't there?
Yeah. You mean we'll go over there and ask them if we...
Listen, Ed. How does the circus get a town all steamed up?
I don't know, Fay. They got elephants and camels and clowns and parades.
Have you got an elephant?
No.
You got any camels around your service station?
No.
Have you got any clowns or parades?
No.
Well, neither have I, but I'm going to get a parade.
A parade?
Yeah, a parade with a brass band and uniforms and everything. And we're going to form at your service station here at noon. And we're going to march over to the roundhouse and bust in on that public address system to recruit observers.
Yeah? Where are you going to get the brass band, Fay?
Over at the Washington School. I just got time to catch the principal before noon. 25 minutes to 12 now. Yep, I'll make it.
Hey, come back here, Fay.
Well, what, Ed?
Look, are you a little bit nuts?
Yeah, I think so, or I wouldn't be organizing a street parade. See you in half an hour.
At 20 minutes after 12, there at Ed Benedict's service station, a uniformed band had organized. It was quick work. School children in uniforms had their instruments and were waiting for the leader's whistle.
Hey, what goes?
Hey, don't ask me. School kids gonna have a parade, I guess.
Huh? Okay, let's go.
Ready, Fay?
Come on, Ed, to take my county sheriff's car. Lieutenant Buford from the filter center is in it now to give it a little military flavor.
Yeah.
We'll lead the parade. Come on, let's go. Get in, Ed.
Okay.
Okay, have the band follow me.
Ready, Mr. Jones. Stand, set.
Parade marched over to the Southern Pacific Roundhouse. It marched into the roundhouse. 200 or more workmen were gathered for a meeting. The band, headed by Faye Jones, Ed Benedict, and Lieutenant Buford, marched up to the platform. Before the meeting started, Faye Jones explained to Mr. Malloy, the head of the SP workers, what was needed. And then Mr. Malloy got up on the platform and called the meeting to order.
All right, quiet, boys. Hold the talk. All right, now. Meeting has come to order. We're gathered here today to dedicate our new public address system. Unexpectedly, a group of townsfolk have come in on us. I'm glad they're here. Bay Jones of the sheriff's office and the man who's organizing a new observation post in our town wants to talk to you. I can think of no better way to dedicate our public address system than to have a patriotic appeal delivered over it. I want you to meet Mr. Bay Jones.
Thanks. We have the Washington School Band with us. A lot of the kids in this band are your kids. I want you all to rise while the band plays America, and we'll all sing. All right. I want to put something up to you straight from the shoulder. You've got a job here running a railroad.
You keep engines and cars and trucks and troop trains running. Running so it can transport soldiers and sailors and tanks and planes and army equipment. Well, what would you do without that job? Now tell me, is your job worth protecting? Is it worth sitting up a night or so a week watching the skies to warn the army if an enemy plane should ever come over Bakersfield and this roundhouse with a load of bombs? Tell me, will you fellas be willing to serve your country here at home as ground observers? Well, I'll tell you what a ground observer is. I'll tell you why we need you.
That noon, Fay Jones got up before those workmen and sold them some good, solid, practical Americanism. They all wanted to help. Nearly all of them volunteered as observers. And now their wives are helping, too. Today, the East Bakersfield Post has a high efficiency rating. It is a highly successful post, of which the 4th Fighter Command is proud. But wait. True, Fay Jones and Ed Benedict got that post operating within a single day. By 6 p.m. that May evening, it was reporting planes. But when a proud and tired Fay Jones reported back to the sheriff's office that evening, when he reported back to his county director, Sheriff Johnny Lustelow.
I didn't think you could do it, Fay.
You said to organize it by the end of the week, Johnny.
Yes, I know.
Well, we did it in a single day.
Oh, that's swell. But, Fay, you put the sheriff's office in a very embarrassing position.
I have? Oh, my gosh, what have I done, Johnny?
You forgot to get a license to stage that street parade this morning.
I did? Gosh. Well, Chief, shall I apply for it now?
Well, I think it's too late, Fay. The good work has been done. And, pal, let me congratulate you.
Each week, we present the National Broadcasting Company's Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award to some outstanding observation post or filter center. Here now is Captain Gomer Lewis, Regional Signal Officer of the Los Angeles Air Defense Wing. Captain Lewis.
Good organization is essential in any successful institution. Enthusiasm and efficiency usually go hand in hand to create a job well done. The present East Bakersfield Observation Post today is well manned, a strong link in the aircraft warning service. Therefore, we salute the East Bakersfield Post and present it with the Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award.
Next week, we dedicate this program to the Santa Maria Valley Red Cross chapter, whose motor car is performing a splendid service to the aircraft warning service. We think other sections of the Pacific Coast will be interested in learning how Santa Maria, California, solved a disheartening transportation problem. This is Gayne Whitman saying goodnight to the 150,000 aircraft warning service volunteer civilians who keep constant vigil of our home front so that America will be safe from any attack by air. Good night.
Eyes Aloft is written and produced by Robert L. Redd. Music is composed and conducted by Gordon Jenkins. This is Ken Carpenter charging you to always remember Eyes Aloft.
Eyes Aloft, watching the sky, watching for planes flying the lanes up above. Eyes Aloft, always on guard, lending a hand, protecting the land we love.
One if I land, the two if I see, was once a sentinel's cry. But a modern 20th century Paul Revere must watch the sky.
Eyes Aloft, night and day, will help protect the USA.
Eyes Aloft comes to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
NBC's Eyes Aloft program, hosted by Ken Carpenter, dedicated to the over 150,000 volunteers of the Air Observer Corps across America during the period. That from November 16th of 1942. Radio's outstanding theater of thrills coming up in just a moment, but first, we'll hear from the white-winged warrior, Chicken Man.
It's night aboard a commercial jet airliner, aloft high in the sky.
Say, stewardess.
Yes, sir.
I think there's somebody knocking on the door of your airplane.
Why, that's impossible.
It's See, I told you.
The surprise steward is quickly issuing oxygen masks to the passengers and depressurizing the cabin, unlocks the massive jet door, and as it slides open...
Hello there.
How do you do?
May I step in, please?
Well,
I'd appreciate your deciding quickly because keeping up with your speed is rather taxing to me.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry. Come in, please.
Thank you. Oh, that's better. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Chicken Man, the wonderful white-winged weekend warrior, the fantastic feathered fighter, perhaps my identity card.
Oh, thank you. Welcome aboard Allied's Flight 417, bound for Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and New York.
Yes.
Our cruising speed is
probably... That's fine. However, I won't be staying. You see, I wonder if I could just borrow a map.
Oh, yes, right here it is.
Fine. I'm looking for Minneapolis.
Oh, right here is where we are.
Yes.
And there's...
Chicago.
And here's Minneapolis.
That's strange. I thought it was down here.
No, that's Yucca Flats. A lot of people make that mistake because Minneapolis looks a lot like Yucca Flats.
Yeah. I have a cousin in Yucca Flats.
Oh, how nice.
Yes.
You may have this map if you like.
Well, that won't be necessary. Well, goodbye for now. Thank you for your help.
Goodbye. Will you be fighting crime in Minneapolis?
No, I'm the guest speaker for the Minneapolis Poultry and Egg Association.
Oh!
Banquet. Well, so long for now.
Have a nice trip.
Thank you.
White-winged warrior recover his lost time this night? Will the Minneapolis Poultry and Egg Association banquet begin without him? And if so, will the feathered fighter ever be invited to be the guest speaker again?
We can't get much sillier than Chicken Man on the WRVO Playhouse. More of our story tomorrow night, right before radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. This CBS broadcast aired June 28th of 1955 and features Harry Bartell, Parley Bear, and William Johnstone in Holdout. Another tale well calculated to keep us all in suspense.
Get started, folks.
Yeah.
And we began the process of deciding whether a man was guilty or not guilty to a charge of murder. There were 2 hours of open discussion before Mr. Munsey, the jury foreman, decided to take the first ballot, the secret ballot. He collected the folded pieces of paper and sat down.
Miss Keller, would you keep count as I read the ballot, please?
All right.
A person is guilty. 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 Not guilty.
What?
Guilty, guilty, and guilty.
11-1.
One holdout.
Now.
Now. Start over, I guess.
How much time have we got?
All day.
And if we don't reach a verdict?
I guess they'll lock us up in a hotel overnight.
They're not locking me up. I got to get home tonight.
All right, then. Let's go over it again, folks. Someone will have to change their mind before we can get out of here.
Mr. Donovan?
Yes, Mrs. Carmichael.
You've been awfully quiet. Anything you'd like to say?
Well, I was trying to think the way the one holdout might be thinking. Is there something we failed to consider?
Possibly the matter of intent to commit murder was definitely premeditated.
Oh, Avery knew his wife was with that Cy Randall fella, so he got a gun and went up there and killed him. I don't care how you spread it, that's murder.
No, no, there's more to it than that, Mr. Smith.
For instance?
There's the plea of temporary insanity.
Yes, that confused me a little. The judge said we should consider temporary insanity.
Oh, to tell you the truth, Mrs. Medina, my woman's intuition
Hogwash.
Really, Mr. Smith, your manner.
Now, let's keep this discussion sensible.
Now, I refuse to discuss
it. That psychiatrist
said Clyde Avery was as sane as any of...
Clyde Avery's mental condition at the time of the shooting... After the stories he heard about his wife, well, how would you feel under those conditions?
Me? Well, what do you mean by
Horace the Pooh?
Every Pooh. That's intent, ain't it? Not
I wouldn't let Smith bother you, Mrs. Carmichael.
Some of these people.